from the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
So to the remaining Hamas leaders and to the jailers of our hostages, I now say, lay down your arms. Let my people go. Free the hostages, all of them, the whole 48. Free the hostages now.
That was Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the UN General Assembly earlier today, calling for the release of the remaining hostages who are being held in Gaza. Welcome to this September 26th edition of Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Thank you so much for tuning in. Also coming up today, former FBI Director James Comey has been indicted for lying to Congress. That makes him the first top official from the Russia investigation to face criminal charges. And joining me shortly will be Congressman Pete Sessions of Texas to break all that down for us. And then also, a Virginia high school is facing a backlash for a male who was entering the girls' locker room, and a potential federal 9 investigation could follow. Stephanie Lundquist-Arora, a concerned parent from there, and also with the Independent Women's Network, will be joining us later to break all that down for us. Benjamin Netanyahu spoke strongly today at the United Nations, criticizing Western countries for recognizing a Palestinian state. He said those countries are sending the wrong message. They're sending the message that killing Jews leads to rewards. Well, joining me now is Washington Stan reporter Casey Harper, who has been following this story. Casey, bring us up to speed. What can you tell us about Netanyahu's speech earlier this morning?
Well, thanks, Jody. Speaking at the UN General Assembly today, Israel's prime minister delivered his strongest criticism yet of recent diplomatic moves by key U.S. allies. He accused them of isolating Israel over its nearly two-year war against Hamas terrorists in Gaza. Netanyahu also said those countries are sending the wrong message that killing Jews can be rewarded.
You didn't do something right. You did something wrong, horribly wrong. Your disgraceful decision will encourage terrorism against Jews and against innocent people everywhere.
Now, as more countries support a Palestinian state, Israel's government is making its position clear. There will be no Palestinian state at all. This all comes against the backdrop of Israel's continued war against Hamas after the terrorist group's October 7th, 2023 attack, which of course killed 1,200 people, Jody.
Well, you know, and on top of all of this, President Trump earlier today says that a Gaza peace agreement could be near. What can you tell us? Is there anything you're hearing about the president's efforts to reach a ceasefire agreement?
Yeah, President Trump raised eyebrows with those comments, Jody. He said he's close to a deal to end the war in Gaza and bring the hostages home. Now, speaking on Friday before leaving for the Ryder Cup in New York, here's what he had to say.
And it's looking like we have a deal on Gaza, and we'll let you know.
Mr. President.
I think it's a deal that will get the hostages back. It's going to be a deal that will end the war. It's going to be a deal which it's going to be peace. I think we have a deal. That'll be number 8, Peter, not bad.
Well, maybe it would be an 8 indeed. President Trump did not give details or a timeline. He's set to meet Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on Monday at the White House to work on the agreement. These comments come as the U.S. shared a 21-point peace plan with leaders from several Middle Eastern countries, and that plan includes returning all hostages, stopping Israeli attacks on Qatar, and restarting talks between Israel and the Palestinians, Jody.
Well, we are certainly praying for Israel, as we did, in fact, yesterday on this program, taking special time for that. But as they face continued and increasing criticism and isolation from many countries, we certainly want to continue praying for them. Casey, I know it's been a busy week, a lot of other things that you're tracking. Kind of give us a 30,000-foot view of what you're following.
Sure. The Washington Stand is tracking a lot of big stories. Former FBI Director James Comey, in fact, was charged Thursday with lying to Congress. Now, this happened days after President Trump called for Comey and others to be prosecuted. Comey is the first senior official from that Russia investigation to face criminal charges, and President Trump celebrated those charges, saying this is, quote, justice for America. After the charges came out, Comey said he's innocent and ready for a trial. Now, in other news that we're following, there's still no progress on efforts to fund the government past September 30th. Senate Majority Leader John Thune called Democrats' health care demands unrealistic, but he said a shutdown can still be avoided. If no deal is reached by the deadline, Jody, the government will shut down, and as Republicans put it, it would be a Schumer shutdown.
Well, Casey Harper, thank you so much for keeping us abreast of so many things taking place. All right, I want to now turn to my next guest for a further analysis of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's UN address earlier today. And joining me now for that discussion is Congressman Pete Sessions of the great state of Texas. He represents the 17th District there. Congressman Sessions, always an honor to have you joining us on Washington Watch. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Our former colleague, Congressman Jody Heiss, is missed still on the Hill, but his insight I love hearing about. And Jody, thank you, because as you know, when you were a member of Congress, you were helpful in helping decide and make policy. People who were thinkers about what they saw were now off on what might be a few days, a break back home. And I have to draw my own analysis, but it was after watching the Prime Minister Netanyahu and watched the number of people that walked out, the number of people who were unwilling to listen, the number of people who were unwilling to hear the latest news from a man who simply spent his time pleading for now some 48 people to be returned. Then that is when the talks for peace can begin. And if the United Nations was made for one thing, it should be about listening, hearing, and working towards making sure that peace can be achieved. I was disappointed in seeing those hundreds of people walk out.
Yeah, I was too. How do you come to agreements when people are not even interested or willing to sit down and listen? It makes you wonder, Congressman Sessions, about the role of the United States as a member of the United Nations going forward. Have you given any thoughts to that?
Well, certainly that is the consideration. I really did not think about that so much as I thought about that the state of affairs at the UN today is simply a one-sided thought process by so many countries that should want and need peace, resolution, ideas about resolving this. And Prime Minister Netanyahu has, from the very beginning, it's not a moving target, said, we need all of our hostages back. And when you get back hostages, if that's what the agreement is, then it could happen almost immediately, where there would be talk, understanding, and a balance between all these people. And that's what we want and need. Yes, I'm disappointed. I think it once again shows that we're a part of some organization that is not thoughtful, is not articulate in aiming towards peace, and perhaps worst of all, they think they're smarter than everybody else. And that's not what working together is about, Jody.
That's right. Well, if I can, Congressman, let me shift gears and come closer to home to Capitol Hill. The federal government is now slated to run out of money on Wednesday. I mean, the clock is ticking, literally at the 11th hour and 59 minute. Is there any news that you're seeing or hearing in regard to negotiations with the Democrats?
Yeah, you know, Jody, I cannot report anything that's favorable at this time. Obviously, sometimes the clock has to get close to closing before people then want to do something. But in this case, I think the objective for the Democrats exceeds the ability that we have to counter punch with that and to make a deal. So Republicans passed as in the House, a bill that I thought was a good bill. I voted for it. And if it's up to the Senate, if you do not want to pass what we've done, then we need to take what you can pass. We've done our work. Unfortunately, I'm very skeptical right now. I've been optimistic until yesterday when I saw the Democrats claw in, dig in. I saw not just Chuck Schumer, but his colleagues say, nope, not going to do anything. So it's a sad set of affairs, but this is the process, and this is the process that we've gone through too many times where we get to the end, and then there's this battle. So I expect that there probably will be a government shutdown now.
That's what it's looking like. And, you know, it looks like they're just digging a deeper hole for themselves. I mean, the president's talking about massive reductions in forces if a shutdown does occur, and every bit of that's going to be placed on their shoulders. Let me go to something else that I know is extremely important to you, given your role and that of your father. But former FBI Director James Comey has been indicted by a federal grand jury. Give us your reactions to that.
Jody, it is very interesting. I watch most FBI directors as they work around issues or give testimony. They are not as specific. They're rounder rather than specific answers. James Comey misled Congress on not only the things he knew, but the role that he had. He was very specific. He left no room for wiggle room. He left nothing to necessarily to where you would question something. He was very direct, and he misled Congress into not only his role, but the role of the FBI and the things that they knew. And there's enough data and information that has come out for a long time now to suggest that the FBI not only participated in this, but enabled it. And certainly to hold James Comey accountable would be a stunning set of circumstances, and one which I think he set the stage himself. He's very direct. He's very specific. And so as those facts became known, he set himself up for this.
Yeah, I mean, this is something you're well familiar with. Your father was a fourth director of the FBI. And so I know, in fact, I was there in those hearings myself asking questions to Director Comey, and this is something we've seen for a long, long time. But this has to have a special place in your heart, seeing what the FBI has turned into. We've got about 30 seconds for you to respond to that.
Well, in fact, I will say that the guys at the very top, the ones on the top floor, found themselves in a circumstance where they gathered together and worked against the best interest of the FBI, the organization, fidelity, bravery, integrity. And they gave that up, and they gave that up not only when they were agents, when they were the management, when they led the FBI, but also afterwards with the vindictiveness that Mr. Comey took out after President Trump when he could. And I think it's a sad thing.
Thank you, Congressman Pete Sessions. It's always an honor. Thank you for what you do for the people of Texas, for the people of the United States, and always an honor to have you join us here on Washington Watch.
Congressman, thank you.
All right, friends. Coming up, we'll continue this conversation on the indictments against former FBI Director James Comey with Judicial Watch. Chris Farrell, stay tuned.
3 years ago, the Supreme Court issued its historic Dobbs decision, a ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade, which for nearly 50 years imposed abortion on demand, silencing voters and bypassing the democratic process across the country. The Dobbs decision was a huge step forward against abortion, but it didn't outright ban it. It returned the power to the people. Now, 29 states have laws on the books protecting life. However, there's a catch. Abortion numbers since Dobbs have actually gone up, with an increase of 12% since 2020, climbing from 930,000 to over 1 million in each of the most recent years. So how can this be? The answer is simple: the abortion drug. Today, over 60% of U.S. abortions involve abortion drugs, many of these without medical oversight. In 2021, the Biden administration quietly removed bare minimum long-standing safety protocols for the abortion drug that have existed for 20 years to protect women from life-threatening risks and ensuring informed consent. The Biden DOJ then declared that they would not enforce the Comstock Act, which prevents the mailing of anything that causes an abortion. This is not only illegal, but also dangerous. A study shows nearly 11% of women who take the abortion drug end up in the emergency room with serious complications. Unless the Trump administration reverses these reckless Biden-era policies, pro-life laws will remain largely symbolic. Without a full review and repeal of mifepristone, unborn lives will remain in grave danger and pregnant mothers will remain at risk. Let's stand for life and end this mail-order abortion drug pipeline. Sign the petition urging the Trump administration to take action at frc.org/stopchemicalabortion.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen His glory. Family Research Council invites you to join our Stand on the Word Bible reading plan as we reflect upon the life of Jesus, the Word who dwelt among us. Come with us and discover the glory of the Word. Read the Gospels and witness the life-changing story of Jesus, His life, death, and resurrection. Come read how Jesus transformed the lives of common people and how those same people transformed the known world through the power of the Holy Spirit. Come with us for 10 to 15 minutes a day and read the entire New Testament before the new year. Find our Bible reading plan and daily devotionals from Tony Perkins at frc.org/Bible. Join us and stand on the Word.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Thank you so much for joining us. Yesterday, as we were just talking about in the last segment, a bombshell indictment from a federal grand jury was filed against former FBI Director James Comey. And in the indictment, Comey was charged with lying to Congress in a criminal case. It was filed just days ahead of the soon-to-be-expired statute of limitations. So we want to go further into this, looking at the specific charges. And now here to join me with all this is Chris Farrell. He's with Judicial Watch. He's the Director of Investigations and Research there at Judicial Watch. Chris, thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. Really good to see you.
Great to be with you. Thank you very much, Jody.
Okay, so I know Judicial Watch has been heavily involved in exposing, if you will, the former FBI director. Why don't we start there and just kind of give us the groundwork of what you all have been doing and working on in this regard.
Well, literally for years, we have pursued trying to get to the bottom of the targeting first of candidate Trump, then the Trump transition, and then President Trump. And in all three phases of that investigation, at the very core, at the very root of those unlawful attempts to really have a soft coup to overthrow the legitimately elected president, at the very heart of all of that was James Comey. He played an integral role. He engaged in unethical and illegal conduct and really ran his own campaign to unlawfully unseat the president. And there's virtually no lengths to which he would go. He leaked to the press. He set up phony investigations. He caused the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller. He contributed to, impeachments that failed. So, you know, this is a concerted, long-term effort by Comey. He has bent and twisted the laws. He's really, President Trump calls him a dirty cop, and that is exactly what he is. And so now, finally, we're seeing some justice.
So it sounds to me from those comments that you really are not at all surprised by the charges.
No, in fact, if anything, I'm disappointed. It took too long, and there's too few charges. This is a very simple, very narrow indictment. It's completely legitimate and very strong, in my opinion. But when you look at the pattern and practice, the conduct of James Comey over years, he and quite a few other people in the Justice Department and the FBI, you know, maybe these indictments are coming. We can hope. But there's really got to be justice. There's got to be prosecutions here, because there's an awful lot of Americans who saw what happened, who understand how President Trump was unlawfully targeted, and they know that, hey, look, somebody's got to be called to account for this.
Yeah, I remember personally, I was on the Oversight Committee when all this was going down, and personally had my opportunity to question Comey. And yes, I remember, I think it was back in September or so of 2020. But kind of take us back to that again, if you will, Chris, all the circumstances that were involved as he appeared before Congress. What was kind of the setting at that moment?
Well, the foundation in August of 2016 was Hillary Clinton's decision, actually in July of 2016, Hillary Clinton's decision to generate a false claim against President Trump and his campaign. And this was the Russia hoax that, you know, Clinton's paid for and was funneled through their campaign attorneys that hired Christopher Steele, a former British MI6 officer who ginned up a phony dossier. The FBI, under Comey's direction, attempted to set up President Trump and other important people like a personal friend and hero, General Mike Flynn. And they did things like they had a counterintelligence investigation that they launched in the United Kingdom and then brought back into the United States, saying that they had to pursue a big espionage case. And, you know, this was a spider web of claims and conspiracies that were ginned up, and it opened the door. It let people like Adam Schiff, who was just a completely, I'm at a loss for words to describe
it. We get it. Yeah.
I mean, he ran an impeachment campaign out of the House Intelligence Committee. You talk about unorthodox, irregular, unlawful activity. Anyway, this was a years-long campaign, and it attempted to destroy President Trump and many innocent people around him. Devin Nunes, another guy who was raked over the coals, and a lot of, you know, quote-unquote little people, you know, ordinary Americans who were staffers who really got ground up in the process. You can't do this. This is a case where they found the person they hated, Donald Trump, and then they gymmed up every crime they could imagine and blamed him and others around him.
And they still can't get over that kind of attacks against him. But so what kind of sentence potentially could Comey face if he's convicted?
I'm not up on the sentencing guidelines for those felonies and whether they're compounded in some. But it is a serious both financial and jail time charge, depending upon how they pursue it.
So were you at all surprised by his reaction to the indictments, the video that he put out?
No, it's standard James Comey. He's smug, condescending, self-righteous. It's James Comey, you know, at his regular self. That's how he comes across, and that's just how he carries himself at all times. He's a remarkably
And he's smooth. He's very smooth in the midst of all of that.
Yeah.
All right. So real quickly, where can folks go to read more about Judicial Watch and the investigations you've got going on?
Sure. We have a ton of information, particularly about this subject, on our website, which is Judicial Watch, altogether one word, judicialwatch.org, O-R-G. And I think folks will be fascinated by what's up there.
I do, too. Thank you so much, Chris Farrell, Judicial Watch's Director of Investigations and Research. Incredible info. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jody. Appreciate it.
All right. Much more coming your way. After the break, we're going to have a conversation with yet another mom regarding the case of female students at a public high school being forced to accommodate a male in the students' locker, in the girls' locker room. So you don't want to miss this story, and it's all coming your way right on the other side of the break, so stay tuned.
Download the new Stand Firm app for Apple and Android phones today. You can join a wonderful community of fellow believers. We've created a special place for you to access news from a biblical perspective. Read and listen to daily devotionals, pray for current events, and more. Share the Stand Firm app with your friends, family, and church members. And of course, stand firm wherever you go.
At Family Research Council, defending the family isn't just a mission, it's our daily calling. Every team member at FRC uses their God-given talents to stand for biblical truth, protect life, and uphold religious freedom.
Here at Family Research Council, we face many threats to the family, threats that have been with us for some time. Abortion, the gender ideology threat, the attacks on marriage, the attacks on parental authority, and the attacks on religious freedom. We have to promote, support, strengthen, and incentivize family growth so families take their place in society in a place of honor.
I'm defending the family by working in the Center for Biblical Worldview to provide cutting-edge research and resources for pastors, ministry leaders, and Christian parents.
Through my work at the Washington Stand, I passionately defend what God has defined for marriage and family. I don't see the Washington Stand as just a place to talk about cultural events. It's a place to share biblical truth. It's a perfect outlet to advance and defend what God has defined as good, true, and beautiful.
Because of you, we're able to frame things in such a way that help Christians stand for truth on the things that matter most, like life, faith, family, and freedom.
Thank you for standing with us.
Thank you for your support. It is so critical to the work that we at Family Research Council are doing day to day as we support and strengthen the family. So thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Thank you so much for joining us today. All right, in yet another case of a Virginia public school turning a blind eye to female students' privacy concerns, Fairfax County Public Schools now facing some hot water and possible trouble regarding a Title IX investigation by the federal government. And the situation arose after a 14-year-old female student saw a male, a sophomore, with facial hair inside the girls' locker room ahead of a PE class at the West Springfield High School. Well, how did administrators react to that situation? Well, here now to share that story is a mom of one of the students there at West Springfield High School, Stephanie Lundquist Arora. She's also a chapter leader of the Independent Women's Network. Stephanie, welcome to Washington Watch. Thank you for coming.
Hi, Jody. Thank you so much for having me. It's unbelievable how many scandals there are in Fairfax County, right? It's like some kind of corrupt New York City from the 1920s. This is like Tammany Hall. District policy allows for bathroom and locker room use based on so-called or proclaimed gender identity and not sex, which is a violation of Title IX. The U.S. Department of Education has already said so. So in this case, it's a parent's absolute worst nightmare. A young freshman girl went in and she saw this and she told the authorities. And there's really nothing that they could do. And it's difficult right now to criticize, for example, the teacher or the principal of the school, because if they were to actually go against district policy, which is to allow this to happen, they could be fired. So this starts from a very, very woke superintendent and a school board, which is 12 members, all Democrat endorsed. So basically, you have a school district that's sponsoring predatory behavior. And a friend of mine got a hold of me and said that she didn't find out that this was happening. Her daughter was, I have three sons. Her daughter was one of the ones in the locker room at the time. She didn't find out this was happening until it was reported on local news in the evening. They didn't let the parents know that the girls were being subjected to this. So she was definitely really upset by that and found out when she asked her daughter that her daughter had been changing since the beginning of the month in a bathroom stall. So absolutely, just a complete disregard to women and girls' privacy in the most intimate spaces in their schools.
So what did the school administrators say regarding the male students' gender identity? I mean, obviously there was a disregard for the concerns of the female students, but did they offer any or did they give any kind of explanation regarding the male students' gender identity? Not that that makes any real difference here, but what was their reaction regarding this?
Well, as far as I know from what's been reported, this boy wasn't even presenting as a girl. He wasn't even pretending he was a girl. He had facial hair, and he was just a boy in there leering because he felt like it. So that's the information that I have. And it's really interesting, isn't it? This secret keeping on the part of the schools from the parents. You can't even get your kids to have a Tylenol if they have a headache without them, you know, like calling you. That's part of parental rights. Like, you should know if your kids are taking, you know, Tylenol or something. But this is a case where they don't even let you know if your daughters are being subjected to a boy who just is, you know, saying he's a boy with his, you know, facial hair, and he just wants to be in there leering. That's what the policy is allowing. And what we're seeing is that all policies at the district level that are political in nature, they're keeping from the parents. So they're giving our kids really invasive surveys about their pronouns, get to know you surveys about what are your preferred pronouns. The district is undergoing an investigation, a criminal investigation, for allegedly facilitating abortions helping facilitate abortions of girls who are minors in the schools, and allegedly also paying for them. So we just have so many issues here: violation of Title IX, wow, violation of parental rights. I mean, there are so many problems in this district that need to be addressed at the district level. And this is happening not just Absolutely. In West Springfield High School, but across the entire district.
Yeah, that was one reason I was asking if they identified the gender of this guy, because as I have not yet heard that they have even said that he was, as you alluded to, posing as a girl. They, as I recall, as I understand, they actually referred to him as a boy, but they were just going to let a boy be in the girls' spaces. Just unbelievable. Now, I understand that the administrators and board members were confronted by a lot of concerned parents over all this. What was their response to that?
Well, you can look on social media, and these people are just willing to die on this transgender hill. Since 2019, they've invested, I don't know if that's the best word, they've poured down a bottomless pit, $44 million on legal fees since 2019. And this is all while our property taxes are certainly being increased. And then they're putting up these proclamations on social media about this being a matter of transgender rights. They claim that they're abiding by state law, which is not the case. In the Fourth Circuit, there's a court case, Grimm is the court case in the Fourth Circuit, and this is about a student who had been taking puberty blockers and transitioning for years that was permitted to use the bathroom facilities of matching whatever the proclaimed gender identity was. So the district is just taking this to its logical extreme. No matter what you think about the Grimm case, this is far beyond that. It's not supported by any kind
Unreal.
Of case law. Nor is it supported by state law or federal law. So it's just a complete violation, blatantly.
Stephanie Lundquist Aurora, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch and sharing this very disturbing story. But thank you so much for joining us, and keep charging.
Thanks so much for having
me. All right, friends. Don't go anywhere. On the other side of the break, David Clawson will be joining me for our weekly Biblical Worldview discussion, so stay with us.
Family Research Council is committed to advancing faith, family, and freedom from the East Coast to the West. So FRC is going to Southern California for this year's Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, October 17th and 18th at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. Join us for this powerful gathering of Christians desiring cultural renewal and spiritual revival. the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit brings together Christian leaders, issue experts, and government officials for a time of prayer, inspiration, and action. Together, we will seek God's guidance for our nation and engage in meaningful discussions on the intersection of faith, government, and culture. If the spiritual foundations and the cultural walls of our nation are to be rebuilt, we all have a role to play. May we each find our place on the wall as we build for biblical truth. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
Jennifer, it's so exciting to be here with you today talking about our new book, Embracing God's Design. Who is actually going to benefit from reading this book in your view?
There are so many different audiences that can benefit. The first one are counselors themselves, right? Because we have some material in there where we really address the gender dysphoria diagnosis and what is wrong with it. We have information for people who are wanting to go back to embracing God's design for their life.
This is really magical to have the therapist and the individual who suffered come together and write about why this is happening and why we're seeing this.
And we brought all of that experience to the table. We want to see people walking in the fullness of who God has called them to be and not a false identity.
Order today at embracethedesign.com.
How should Christians think about the thorny issues shaping our culture? How should Christians address deceitful ideas like transgenderism, critical theory, or assisted suicide? How can Christians navigate raising children in a broken culture, the war on gender roles, or rebuilding our once great nation? Outstanding is a podcast from the Washington Stand dedicated to these critical conversations. Outstanding seeks to tear down what our corrupt culture lifts up with an aim to take every thought and every idea captive to the obedience of Christ. Whether policies or partisan politics, whether conflict in America or conflict abroad, join us and our guests as we examine the headlines through the lens of Scripture and explore how Christians can faithfully exalt Christ in all of life. Follow Outstanding on your favorite podcast app and look for new episodes each week.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Hope you're having a fantastic day. I'm your Friday host here, Jody Heiss, and we appreciate you joining us. All right, before I go to my final guest today, I want to once again encourage each of you, if you have not already done so, I want to strongly encourage you to go ahead now and register for our upcoming Pray, Vote, Stand Summit. It will be taking place in just 3 weeks, October 17th and 18th in Chino Hills, California. And if you have registered, which many of you have, I want to encourage you to tell some others to come too. Bring them with you. PrayVoteStand.org is the website to visit. Details and registration information is all there for you, PrayVoteStand.org. And then I also real quickly want to encourage you, if you've not already done so, to get the FRC Stand Firm app. If you don't already have this, friends, I'm telling you, this will be an app that you are so grateful to have. I've mentioned it personally to a number of people recently, and it's just been a source that they are so grateful to have. You can get it at the App Store or at Google Play, wherever it is that you get your apps. Or if you want to do it the easy way, just text the word APP, A-P-P. Just text APP to 67742. You will be glad that you have Stand Firm. All right, we've discussed this many times on the program about the dangers of the abortion drug mifepristone, the dangers that it poses obviously not only to the unborn, but to the mothers themselves. And now we have some very welcome news. The Trump administration announced in a letter that they sent to 22 different Republican attorneys generals that the FDA is indeed planning to re-examine whether or not mifepristone is really safe. Is it as safe as the left claims it is? And in that letter, HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., along with FDA Commissioner Marty Makary, said that the agency would conduct its own review of the evidence, including real-world outcomes and evidence relating to the safety and efficacy of the drug. That is huge and welcome news. And joining me now to discuss this, as well as some other things for our weekly Biblical Worldview discussion, is David Clawson. He's the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council and author of the recent book, Life After Roe, Equipping Christians in the Fight for Life Today. David, as always, thanks for joining me on Friday. Good to see you.
Happy Friday. Great to be with you, Jody.
All right, so we've got some good news I was just talking about, and I know that that you're all over this, and I'd love to get your reaction to the news about the letter that was sent to Republican attorneys generals promising to study the issue of chemical abortion.
Yeah, Jody, this is great news, and we know actually going back to May is when HHS, of course, which is led by Bobby Kennedy and his FDA director, back in May is when they told us that they were going to conduct a review of the safety of chemical abortion drugs, the mifepristone pill that you mentioned. This letter that was reported on just a day or two ago basically confirms that this review is underway and ongoing. So again, this is very encouraging. They promised that they were going to do this back in May, and that the fact now that we know that they are doing this, this is encouraging. Of course, those of us at Family Research Council, we are encouraging the administration that while this review is ongoing to reinstate some of those original safeguards that were in place back in 2000 when this pill was initially approved in the waning days of the Clinton administration. We want some of those original safeguards put in place, as well as an ultrasound requirement. But because we know, Jody, these pills are not safe, obviously not, they're lethal for unborn children. But even the FDA's own research shows that 1 in 25 women have an adverse health effect. And of course, a survey, a big major research project in the spring showed that the number is actually much higher. This is the EPPC report that shows it's actually closer to 11% of women have an adverse health effect. So this is great news that we have confirmation that this review is ongoing, and we need to be praying and hoping and continue to encourage the administration to do the right thing.
Yeah, and as all of us could imagine, abortion rights groups are totally up in arms about this letter. They don't want to see this happen. But I want to underscore what you just said in relation to the history of these pills. I mean, back when they were first approved, there were safeguards that were in place at that time, but those were rolled back under Democratic presidents. Is that correct?
Jody, absolutely. And when you introduced me, you mentioned my book, and I actually hold a whole section detailing this because I really believe this is kind of the next frontier. This is, you know, 63%. Some estimates place it even higher of abortions that take place in this country are through these chemical abortion drugs. So it's incredibly significant. When these pills, by the way, were approved under a very hasty, very politicized process, again, in the waning months of the Clinton administration, there were some safeguards put in place. You could only take these pills 49 days gestation. There were three in-person doctor visits that were required. Only physicians could prescribe the pills. You had to report all adverse health effects. And it was the Obama administration, actually in 2016, that walked back many of those safeguards. They reduced the number of in-person visits to one. Non-physicians could prescribe them. They allowed the drugs to be prescribed up to 70 days. No reporting of non-fatal adverse effects. And then, of course, it was the Biden administration that went even further using the COVID-19 pandemic to allow these pills actually to be sent through the mail and through telehealth. And so, again, these are just it's very unregulated. It's kind of the wild, wild west. And that's why this review is so important, with the hope that some of the things that the Biden and Obama teams did, we can roll those back for the safety of children and women.
And David, I think this is a good opportunity to bring up the reality that We've just recently seen, for example, defunding in Planned Parenthood. That's been a big discussion, and grateful to see that happen. And that is great. But there's a big but here, and that is that Planned Parenthood does not do the number of abortions they used to do. As you just said, didn't you say 63% of abortions are now done through these pills, these chemical abortions? That is, as you just said, that is the new frontier. And that is the issue that has to be addressed. And I'm thrilled to see the administration going forward in this regard on these abortion drugs.
Yeah, Jody, absolutely. It's critical because, again, I remember when I was growing up in the 90s, going to pray, you know, on a Saturday outside abortion clinics, because most abortions, of course, that were taking place were surgical abortions. In the 90s, it was all of them, of course, here in this country, at least. But again, these chemical abortion drugs are the overwhelming majority. In fact, of course, we praise the Lord. We all remember where we were June 24th, 2022, when Roe v. Wade was overturned in the Dobbs decision. But in the year after Roe was overturned, there were more abortions by most statistics than the previous year. And why is that? It's because of these pills. And so, again, those of us who are pro-life need to realize this is our battle now. And again, these are just they're lethal for babies, dangerous for women.
Absolutely. All right, David, I'm going to throw you a curveball. Here it comes. Okay. I know this, your area of biblical worldview, and you're fantastic at that, not necessarily with elections, but there's a lot of talk that this issue that you and I are talking about right now is going to be a huge midterm election in 2026, an issue for those midterms. How do you respond to folks who are worried somehow that the midterm elections might be in jeopardy given the context of the study on these abortion pills?
Well, Jody, look what happened in 2022. You know, you don't need to be a Nostradamus. I think, you know, the left, abortion is their sacrament. They think about abortion all the time. And I think what we learned in the 24 election and in the 22 midterms is that the average American doesn't think about abortion every day. They think about the price of groceries. They think about the price of gas. They think about the economy. They think about taxes. In 2022, months after Roe v. Wade was overturned, you had a lot of pro-life governors, actually. Governor DeSantis in Florida, Governor Kemp in Georgia, Greg Abbott in Texas, Mike DeWine in Ohio, that actually cruised to re-election, and they ran on a strong pro-life campaign. And so I think, yes, this will be brought up. The left wants.
All right, we lost David Clawson. We'll try to get him back here in just a moment. While we're waiting on him, I want to run back over to Casey Harper. Casey, are you with us? We lose Casey as well.
Jody, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you go, Casey.
Hey,
yeah,
we got you now.
Yeah, we've got you. I appreciate you sticking around. Listen, there's been so much going on. I want to just come back to you as I can. I know we're trying to get David back. We're right in the middle of a big conversation with him. I want to get back to him. But I wanted to come back with you. We were talking with you earlier about Benjamin Netanyahu's speech. And one of the things that really was disturbing to me was the number of diplomats who walked out. Mm-hmm. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I do want to say on that Mifepristone conversation, there's no bigger conversation. I'm really glad you're talking about it, Jody, yep. Because this is for biblically minded spiritual Christians. This has to be a defining issue of prayer. If you're praying for our nation, this is an area where there could be breakthrough overnight. I mean, there's a lot of things where you'd have to pass a huge bill and it has to go through committees and everyone has to sign on. This is something that could be changed overnight, as you well know, Jody. So I appreciate you bringing it up. As for what's going on with Israel, all eyes are on Israel right now. They are center stage, and the only eyes that weren't on Israel this week are those who turned their backs on Israel and walked out. And so Israel has become increasingly isolated on the world stage, as I said earlier in the program, because as this war in Gaza has continued, as the civilian casualties have continued to climb, and honestly, as Israel gets closer to possibly ending the war, the pressure is ramping up on them to basically stop the war. And a big part of that reason is because Hamas is ramping up the pressure. You're seeing some desperation from them. They sent a letter to President Trump saying, okay, we'll give up half the hostages if we can get a 60-day ceasefire, which I think was a pretty telling admission. Of course, President Trump has responded in his very own unique style, saying, I don't want two hostages tomorrow and three next week and half of one a month later. I want them all released. And so that deal didn't work, but it shows you Hamas is getting desperate. Israel is pushing into Gaza City right now, which is a Hamas stronghold in the northern part of Gaza, the northern half of Gaza. But they're getting pushback, Jody. I mean, the world, even Western countries that once stood with the U.S. in supporting Israel and rejecting a Palestinian state, even those countries, like places like France, have said, you know, we can't support Israel in this way any longer.
Yeah, and, you know, I wanted to bring this up because I was not able to get to it earlier, but with all these folks walking out, to me, it's an enormous sign of disrespect and so forth. We can go down that path. Mm-hmm. But Prime Minister Netanyahu had a much larger audience than was right there in the room, thanks to the technology of his own people. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, he did. This is a very unique, this is kind of reminiscent of when Israel, I'm sure you remember, made all those pagers explode and all over the world. It was kind of like something we'd never seen before. Well, in this case, Israel, they sort of hacked, I guess you could say, the phones of Palestinians all throughout Gaza. And so that Netanyahu's speech was actually streamed live to the devices of people in Gaza. And he said he wanted them to hear it. And the message he's really trying to get across to them, Jody, is Hamas could end this war today if they release the hostages. So, of course, there's a lot of debate over it. But from Netanyahu's perspective and from the U.S. perspective, if Hamas would lay down their weapons, release the hostages, this war could be over tonight. And that's the message that Netanyahu streamed to all these Palestinians. Maybe that'll get through to them. Maybe that will, you know, erode some support for Hamas. But at this point, Hamas is pretty dug in, although they are weakening by the day, Jody.
It's just amazing the technology
right
that they utilize. And there he is speaking at the UN and saying, not only am I speaking to those of you who did not walk out,
right,
but to everyone in Gaza and Hamas,
yeah,
we took over the phone.
Well, it's a show of strength,
amazing,
right? I mean, it's a huge show of strength.
That's incredible.
We can take over the entire telecommunications of your whole country. We can identify all your leaders,
yeah,
and give them pagers that explode. It's really a show of dominance, really, is what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Casey Harper, thank you so much. I'm going to jump back over to David Clausen. David, thank you for coming back on us. Sorry we lost you. Don't know what happened there. Listen, we've only got less than a minute left. I was just talking with Casey about Israel, so much happening around the world, but you actually posted on social media about that as well and the moral clarity with which Netanyahu spoke. Tell us about that real quickly.
Yeah, Jody, my wife and I were on vacation. We watched Netanyahu's speech this morning at the UN, and the moral clarity to speak about what's happening, how the Western leaders are turning their backs despite what happened on October the 7th, what's happening in that war, and kudos for President Trump and other nations standing in Israel. It's the right thing to do. And I would encourage all of our listeners to watch the Prime Minister's speech this morning. It was a masterclass in speaking truth to power.
Moral clarity. I love the way you describe that. David Clausen, sorry we had some bad coverage or whatever with you today. But as always, thank you for joining us for a Biblical Worldview segment. Greatly appreciate it. I hope you have a great weekend. All right, friends, that wraps up this week and this edition of Washington Watch. I do want to encourage you to continue praying for Israel. We are seeing just some unprecedented things take place. So as you enjoy your weekend and go to church, as you gather with fellow believers, pray for Israel. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.